From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of October 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the farm bill is moving, maybe, on Capitol Hill. Monsanto has posted a financial loss for its fourth quarter, and China is expected to again issue import tariffs on grains and oilseeds. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And don't forget, as we close out our half hour together, we'll talk with meteorologist Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated about the weather forecast. He, of course, is in Kansas City. And that'll all happen as we finish up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In Chicago for a Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly higher. The nearby contract for the corn at $4.39 was unchanged. March at $4.51¾ unchanged, and May futures at $4.59¾ unchanged. July corn $4.67 up a half. December of next year at $4.80¼ up a quarter of a cent. November beans at $12.73¾ up 5¾. January $12.75¾, 5¾ higher, and the March contract at $12.57½ up 4½ cents. May soybeans $12.39, 5¼ higher. July at $12.34, up a nickel. Bean meal futures, or rather November, at $11.59 for next year, up 9½ cents. Now the bean meal at $4.1760, up $9.10. Bean oil at $39.12. That's down 89. The July wheat futures for the soft red at $6.81¾, up 6 cents. And the July hard red at $7.50¼, down a half cent for the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the nearby October at $127.30. That's up a nickel for 100 pounds. December futures at $131.82½, 7½ cents lower. The February there up 15 at $133.65. October feeders at $164.57½. Up 17½, November at $166.20, up 15, January at $165.77½, up 57½, and the lean hogs finished the October 2½ cents higher at $90.95, December futures at $86.17½, finished 27½ cents higher. You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures trading the November at $103.97. That's $1.93 higher. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at $2.62 and 7 tenths, a penny and 7 tenths higher. And ethanol futures at $1.78 and 7 tenths. That's down 12 3/10 of a cent. Natural gas at $3.54 and 3 tenths, down 6 6/10. And diesel fuel at $2.99, up 3½ cents for the day. Gold futures at $1,320.50 an ounce, finished $34.60 higher. And the U.S. dollar trading below 80 now at 79.9, down 0.23 on the afternoon. What's the weather forecast look like as we hear it from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon? Right now, outside of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign WILL studios, it is 72 degrees under cloudy skies. And as we look forward to the next couple of days, we should see rainfall. We'll hear more about that as we talk to Drew Lerner later in this program. He's looking forward to some inches, rather a half inch to maybe an inch, in the St. Louis to Western Illinois area. We'll talk again with Drew about that coming up in the next half hour or so, in about 20 minutes. The current conditions, again, show us 72 degrees, and by this afternoon, or rather this evening, we'll see a 50% chance of rainfall. That coming after 7 o'clock, mostly cloudy, a low of just 65 tonight. Tomorrow, showers, likely, possibly a thunderstorm before 1 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time, then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1. Mostly cloudy and a high of 81. Precipitation coverage in the area tomorrow, 60%. Tomorrow evening, partly cloudy and a low of 64. The rain will go away. Friday, mostly sunny skies and a high of 87 degrees. More again on the weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner. This is the October 2nd edition of the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business, so Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
On the phone line with us for this Wednesday afternoon, the second day of October, is Jackie Vick. She's with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Farmers are busy, probably trying to work really hard before the rainfall comes in, but it's not the, I would guess it's kind of the, it's their biggest worry, but there are other things that are happening in the marketplace we ought to talk about to begin with. The government shutdown is really beginning to throw some kinks into the market, I suppose.
Well, it is. You know, the biggest one and the most important at the moment, of course, is the settlement of the milk contracts from September. And CME did announce this morning that they're going to get the prices from the federal milk marketing order, and they will be able to do those. And the next one, of course, would be the October hogs and then the October feeder cattle. All of those particular contracts are cash settled and rely on getting numbers from the USDA. You know, today another thing that came up was the feeder cattle index and the lean hog index are indefinitely stopped. That's another guiding point that we use, of course, for where futures are versus where cash is actually at. And so, you know, export sales will be missing tomorrow morning. Next week, Monday, if we're not up and running again, export inspections will not be around. And then if we look further out, of course, we have the October 11th USDA supply and demand report, which everyone is anticipating, waiting to see if we're actually going to see it drop in harvested acres. Are we going to see more acres than what we thought were planted? There are just so many questions that we need that report to be able to answer. And so, yes, it is definitely having an impact.
And, of course, along with the supply and demand report, we'd also get the crop production report, and that would rely on survey work that isn't taking place at the moment.
That's right. And so that particular, well, we can probably kind of forget about that because that does take place usually these first 2 weeks of the month, and so I doubt very much if we're going to get any information on that. The only information that there would be available would be the FSA numbers, and again, that that is in regard to acreage.
And volume has been able to stay up or not stay up? Are people aside?
No, volume's a low. Volume has dropped off a great deal. In fact, today is the first time that we saw the dollar index and a futures contract, the December contract on the dollar, actually go below 80 since February. And I believe that a lot of that is related to, you know, buyers are just going to stand on the side. They're going to see how long this goes on, what kind of an impact it might have on the actual economy itself. European buyers are certainly going to be waiting on the sidelines to see once what's happening. But I would venture to think that, you know, they would be likely buyers once things get back to normal again and begin to run. I think there's a lot of hope, at least on the European, all the reading that I've been doing on the European side is there's a great deal of hope that maybe this will finally trigger some type of settlement when it comes to the debt ceiling.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait Washington out a bit. I have another question about the low volume. I suppose maybe as we begin this process in the last 2 days that it might allow the market to drift a bit lower. But does it not also create greater volatility over time because there just is a lack of trade?
Absolutely. Volatility. Well, you know, if someone can think about it like going to an auction, you know, if you have one person who's bidding on something, the bids aren't probably going very far. If you have a lot of people who are bidding on it, you know, you're going to have a much busier marketplace. In this particular case, if you want to sell something and there's only one guy who wants to buy it, and he's offering something a great deal lower, you may eventually end up settling for that. And so, yes, low volume has always led to high volatility just because, you know, you just don't have as many people involved.
And let's turn our attention now directly to the marketplace. Corn futures didn't do a whole lot. I suppose maybe they were supported by wheat today?
Well, I think wheat has been a great supporter. A little bit of support probably came out of the ethanol report that came out today, too, Todd. We saw production up 11.6% over a year ago so far, and it was up over last month. Stocks are down 17.5%. The only thing that's a little concerning on that report is that we're averaging 91.88 million bushels of corn use per week for ethanol, which means we now have to actually get to 94.36 per week to make that 4.9 billion bushel prediction that the USDA has out there. But there's no question that wheat was a supporter. You know, when you look at the December corn went down and actually put in a quarter cent lower low than yesterday. Just couldn't stop that quarter cent to put in a double bottom. But you know, we bounced off of it, and it was a probing day. I follow. You know, when I look at the markets, I look to see once how far do we go down and where do we end up. You know, and if you look at candlesticks, we had a long wick to the bottom and a short wick to the top. So, you know, they did test to the bottom and find out, you know, was there a lot of selling there? And there didn't appear to be today, at least. So we do have to get above 452, though, again, to really feel like we're back on track because, you know, that's 138% retracement from that August low of 445 and three quarters to the August high of 508 and a quarter. And that has been a strong spot for us. So it's going to be a very interesting ride here with this government shutdown in the background.
And then I suppose we ought to take a moment and explain a term. Candlesticks is a chart term. It's the open is the top of the candlestick, and the close can be the bottom or whichever way they happen to be, the bottom of the candlestick, and then the wick is how far out it trades from either side of the open or the close. So kind of looks like a candlestick with a wick kind of sticking out from either end, right?
Absolutely. And when you have a close that's exactly the same as the open was, you have what you call a doji, and that is usually an indicator of a change. And we came very, very close to that on corn today, but we didn't quite make it. So you know, tomorrow will be more of a confirming day, and we'll see once where we go from there. But I also think, you know, the weather is in the background here on corn, Todd. You know, from the standpoint that, and it certainly helped beans today too, slowing down of harvest. And all of that always, you know, adds to loss potential and all of those types of things. And so we've got a lot of things going on out there.
Weather may play a bigger role than we think, I suppose, in the future. South America's awful dry, especially Argentina.
I was just going to say, you know, South America is the one that's probably playing even a bigger role than what this current possible wet weather that we've got coming is. You know, Argentina's very dry to the point where they've cut off their wheat exports, and that's part of what's supporting wheat here because we have China and Brazil. They were both big buyers last week of wheat here in the U.S., and I don't believe Argentina is going to do anything in terms of opening their market until they know for certain they can meet their domestic demand. And Mato Grosso, now some parts of Brazil are getting some decent rains, and they are actually starting to plant some beans, but Mato Grosso still is very, very dry. And so, you know, they're the largest bean-growing state in Brazil. So I think weather around the world will again be playing a big part in what happens here.
Any chart points for the November beans?
Well, I look at November beans, you know, we have major support at that 1258 level on the weekly moving average, and we've got resistance at 1282, the 100-day moving average, on a daily chart. And so, you know, if you looked at today's trade, we went down to 1263 and three quarters, close to yesterday's low, but we went right up to 1282 and failed. So I believe that those will be two strong points, and we'll probably range trade in between there until we get more information.
Close me out with a bit on the livestock, please.
Well, when you look at the livestock, of course, we had a rough day yesterday, and that was primarily because of the government impact. Today we saw quite a bit of short covering coming in on the hogs, and they definitely expect higher cattle cash prices. You know, the choice select ratio right now is at 15.64, so we have a lot of really nice choice finished animals standing out in that yard. So I don't expect it to go a great deal higher, but I do think it could go a dollar to maybe $2 higher this week.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. That's Jackie Vick. She's with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Joins us on the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You can find us online at willag.org. Dave Dickey is here now. He's your director of ag programming and has today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid yesterday named conferees to resolve differences between the Senate and House versions of the Farm Bill. Reid named 7 Democrats and 5 Republicans, all current members of the Agriculture Committee. The appointment of Senate conferees paves the way for House Speaker John Boehner to name his conferees. Boehner has not said whether he will follow tradition and name members of the House Agriculture Committee. Senate Ag Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow believes that the conference should occur quickly, saying there's no reason they can't sit down this month and get it done. But Stabenow says finding common ground on the nutrition title could be difficult. The House bill cuts $39 billion over 10 years, the Senate version about $4.5 billion. Another difference between the House and Senate bills is that the House Farm Bill reauthorizes nutrition programs for 3 years and the farm program for 5 years. That, if kept in the conference report, could set the programs on a permanent path of separation. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says decoupling the farm program from nutrition programs would mean going forward that the House would likely not pass a farm program bill. Monsanto says its financial loss widened in the fiscal fourth quarter as sales of biotech seeds dropped. The St. Louis company recorded a loss of $249 million, or 47 cents per share, for the quarter ending August 31st. That compares with a loss of $264 million, or 42 cents per share, in the 2012 period. Separately, Monsanto said it plans to purchase farming software and data firm The Climate Corporation for $930 million in cash. The company's technology uses weather forecasting and data analysis to help farmers with planting and harvests. China will issue low-tariff import quotas for key grains in 2014 at the same level it allocated this year. The wheat import quotas are capped at 9.6 million tons and corn at 7.2 million tons. Corn imports may reach the full quota level this year, according to a forecast by USDA, as Chinese importers take advantage of the wide price gap between overseas and domestic markets. China domestic corn prices have rallied on stockpiling by Beijing, which has pushed Chinese corn prices nearly 20% higher than new U.S. corn. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program we record at 4:30 on Friday afternoons. This week, by the way, our guest is John Bondurant from Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee. We always try to have him on the first week of October and the first week of April. Be sure to tune in to one of our radio stations or listen online at willag.org for John Bondurant on Commodity Week. Now up next, the sale of Smithfield creates some long-term security for livestock and row crop farmers. I'll have more in a moment.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Our story on the sale of Smithfield Foods comes courtesy Rhonda Garrison of the Southern Farm Network in Raleigh, North Carolina. She says the ink is barely dry on the sale of Smithfield Foods to Chinese conglomerate Shuanwei International, and Dr. Nick Piggott, ag economist at North Carolina State, says he has nothing but optimism for the future of Smithfield and its employees.
That's the reassuring thing about the deal as it's been inked. Sometimes we have concerns about foreign ownership, but with the promise that it's business as usual and the management team and employment contracts as they stand, stay in place, which led Smithfield to be one of the largest bleeding pork producer, means that I'm very optimistic about this deal, and it really offers a growth opportunity for the U.S. pork industry to grow internationally. It opens a door for the really strong growth market for pork in the world, which is China.
In fact, Smithfield's upper-level management isn't just a transition team, but will continue to be open-ended employees, just as they always have. Pigott goes on to explain the further opening of the Chinese market could help Smithfield's future growth.
It's worth pointing out that pork in particular, which is what this deal is about, has been stagnant in the U.S. at about 60 pounds per person. The average American eats about 230 pounds of meat per year, and in just the last few years, that's actually declined some. And in the U.S., our preference is for chicken and beef. About 40% of our meat is consumed as chicken, 34% is beef, and only 26% is pork. Where in China, they have a very strong preference for pork, with about 73% of their meat consumption being pork. And right now, the average Chinese person eats about half the amount of meat that an American does.
Pigott explains that hog farmers aren't the only ones that should be feeling some added security with the sale of Smithfield. He thinks there's added security for row crop farmers, too, whether they have livestock or not.
North Carolina produces about 100 million bushels of feed grains a year, and this new deal and securing the demand for pork in an international market in turn means that the demand for feed grains in North Carolina is going to continue to be strong. So our markets for corn, wheat, and the newly developing grain sorghum markets look good as we try to continue to overcome our grain deficit of about 200 million bushels a year. So that problem hasn't gone away. In fact, it probably makes it even more important. So I see this as a real opportunity for row crop farmers as well, to that their end product, which is an input into the hog industry. The demand for that has been very well secured.
That's North Carolina State Ag Economist Dr. Nick Pigott. Our story again courtesy of National Association of Farm Broadcasting member Rhonda Garrison of the Southern Farm Network out of Raleigh, North Carolina.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is Illinois Public Media. Let's check the cash grain market. On the phone line with us is Stephen Linnebar. He's at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. Are you busy today, Stephen?
Oh, not bad, Todd. Not bad. Kind of a slow day. I think Mother Nature putting a little extra dew on the crops in the morning hours. We need that sunshine to really get going.
And farmers mostly in soybeans for the day?
No, actually we're starting to see a shift into corn, really. The last couple of days our loads compared corn to bean-wise favors corn.
And is that because corn's ready, or are they just wrapping up soybean
harvest? I think we can attest to the fact that I think we can deliver corn with a little higher moisture. Harvesting those beans at 15-16%, a little more of a discount potential there. So I see the shift going back to beans if we can get some warmer weather, as we don't want to let them to continue to hang in the field. But as of right now, seems to be favoring corn.
Second round of corn as good as the first one then, yield-wise?
So far, so good. We've seen test weight improve a little with that decrease in moisture in relation to that first go-round in the mid-September, a little wetter. But very much pleased thus far.
And your bids for the day?
Cash corn at the close, 424. Delphi, 424 to Climbers. Beans, 1254.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
All right. Stephen Linnebar is with the Andersons. He's at their Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Well, back in 2 minutes, we'll talk about the weather forecast with ag meteorologist Drew Lerner.
It's National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. The ice cream treat was likely invented in the summer of 1900 on the Lower East Side of New York City. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, the first U.S. national income tax was passed to aid the Union war effort. In 1866, the first patent for a tin can with a key opener was issued in the U.S. In 1887, numerous websites give credit to Rowell Hodge for the patent of barbed wire. But history shows that Joseph Glidden is the father of modern barbed wire. The DeKalb, Illinois native attended a country fair where he witnessed a demonstration of a wooden rail with sharp nails protruding along its sides. It inspired Glidden to fashion barbs on an improvised coffee bean grinder, placing them on a smooth wire and then twisting another wire around the first to hold it in place. And in 1966, Richard Shoup died, an American pathologist. He was the first to identify an influenza virus and first to vaccinate animals against influenza. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Learnard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Learned, World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, tell me about the weather that's moving into the Midwest, maybe a little rainfall and some change in conditions.
Yeah, it's that time of the year. We're going to see some increasing shower development as we go through the afternoon and into the evening hours across a fair amount of Illinois, Indiana, parts of Missouri. And eventually shifting this all to the northeast as we go into the day on Thursday. And we will see tomorrow's weather still scattering on the shower activity across a big part of the Midwest. So a lot of areas will end up with seeing a chance for some precipitation. The model data today suggests that most of this precipitation is going to be quite variable from one county to another. So it's going to be a matter of getting lucky or unlucky here, whether or not the amounts of rain are going to be a disruption of significance to fieldwork. The majority of the precipitation, though, is expected to be light. We'll look for a few hundredths of an inch, upwards to a quarter of an inch occurring most often. But it does look as though there's a few counties coming out of near St. Louis into the heart of Illinois that could end up getting some half inch to one inch totals. And this would be for the 24-hour period coming up, ending at about noontime on Thursday. So we'll keep an eye on that. A couple of other stronger thunderstorms may occur Thursday afternoon into Friday morning across some of the area further to the north from northern Illinois into parts of southern Michigan. The biggest part of the storm system that will be impacting the region will not show up until we get into probably Friday night and Saturday morning for areas in Missouri and Illinois, and then from Saturday into Sunday and the rest of the eastern Midwest. That's when a cold front will cut through the region from west to east. We'll expect to see rain totals running from a tenth to three-quarters of an inch with the frontal boundary, and there could very well be some strong to severe thunderstorms with that, so we'll have to keep an eye on the frontal boundary. It'll probably be most active late Friday night through Saturday evening. So as it marches across the Midwest, there could be some strong wind along with some heavy rain and some hail possible with that frontal passage.
Does the cold front with it bring a real change in temperature or not?
It will to some areas. Actually, everybody will cool down, at least notably. We'll go from temperatures that are going to be in the 80s to up around close to 90 degrees ahead of this frontal system on Friday afternoon to readings that will be more 60s and lower 70s on the other end of the weekend. And so a pretty significant temperature contrast. That's one of the reasons why we've got the strong to severe thunderstorm risk. The cooler weather will only last for a short period of time. It will turn around and start to warm up a little bit, but a reinforcing shot of cooler air will come along at midweek next week. I don't think we'll see any frost or freezes in the heart of the Midwest from this first disturbance over this coming weekend, but portions of the region from Nebraska to Minnesota will, including maybe a part of northwestern and central Iowa, see a little bit of frost with this event. No hard freezes, but the frontal boundary will diminish quite a bit, and the air mass will moderate as it comes across the eastern Midwest. At the end of next week, though, all bets are off. I think the western Corn Belt could see a more significant freeze event.
Thanks so much, Drew.
Have a good afternoon.
You too. Drew Learner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.